Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting in what you say. Today is the day.
It's Monday, October 22. Day 295 of the year 2018. Great to have you along. I'm Neil Stave. I'm sitting in for Peter Kapsner here on Faith Radio Mornings across the Faith Radio Network. Special welcome to you wherever you might be listening in. Maybe listening on the Faith Radio app, which is free, by the way, to download. You can listen anywhere. Take us with you. I'd be honored to have you checking us out. You can go to the Apple App Store or Google Play and find the Faith Radio Network app and listen along anytime. Well, today is the day. Today was a day of uncertainty back in the year 1962. Some of you remember that well. Threatened by nuclear-armed Soviet missiles installed just 90 miles from Florida, the Cuban Missile Crisis held Americans in fear. As President Kennedy explained on national television, that the U.S. was prepared to respond with military force. If you've read about that or remember your history, that was a time of great uncertainty. A lot of things that are uncertain that we live in today. Midterm elections, uncertain about that. You know, the direction of our country, uncertain about that. But some things that we can know for sure is that Jesus is coming back. God is on the throne, and we can have confidence in his plans and purposes. They will prevail. Coming up here in the second half of this hour, we'll talk with David Aikman. Dr. David Aikman, a regular contributor here to Faith Radio Mornings, got a lot of news to get to with David. First, though, we're going to meet Dr. Mikhail Harris. Mikhail is an associate professor, licensed psychologist, specializing in pediatric and family health, and has written a wonderful article just recently about unforgiveness. And in this season of contentiousness, some focus on forgiveness will go a long way. And we'll meet Mikhail Harris in just a minute. Eight past the hour on a Monday morning. Thanks so much for tuning in. You've heard the old saying, to live above with saints we love, oh, that would be glory. But to live below with saints we know, that's another story. All right. Getting along with each other involves being willing to forgive. And we're going to meet Dr. Mikhail Harris, licensed psychologist, nationally certified health service psychologist, who experienced some unforgiveness for a number of years, and wrote about it here recently, and we want to get her reflections on that and maybe draw out a few lessons for all of us. Dr. Harris, welcome to Faith Radio Mornings.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Your article tells a story that's probably pretty common for many of us, that you went through a long period of life dealing with unforgiveness. And maybe just to set up our conversation, tell a bit about the backstory.
Absolutely. I think unforgiveness, as you mentioned, is something that is so prevalent in our society. Even within the Christian community, I think a lot of folks walk around with bitterness in their hearts. My story is very common, and it involves the relationship with my father. Grew up in a home with my mom and dad and older brother. And because of the relationship that resulted in my parents' marriage, which was pretty dysfunctional, that led to a lot of anger, hurt, and bitterness in my heart, and that lingered for over 20 years in the relationship with my dad.
Is it often parents that are maybe the source or the reason for, you know, sometimes our lack of forgiveness? I mean, it's just probably the closest relationship, so I guess that's maybe shouldn't be uncommon.
Yeah, I think that, you know, our parents are the first examples who we have of our Father, our Heavenly Father. Do I think parents are the source of unforgiveness? Not necessarily. I mean, we live in a fallen world, and John 16:33 says, in the world, you're going to have trouble. But take heart, I've overcome the world. So I think that sin and our sinful nature is something that is really intrinsic to each of us. And we're all potential victims of unforgiveness and bitterness.
You describe it as chains of unforgiveness. I mean, that's a pretty vivid picture. Talk about the chains, how unforgiveness chains us.
Yeah, I think when you begin to experience bitterness, hurts, and anger within your heart, what that does is it really does chain you down. It chains you to the event or the events that have led to the feeling of unforgiveness. And over time, as you talk about the situation, as you really don't take steps to heal, those chains, those links begin to grow on that chain. And you really are held hostage to that. I certainly was, as I mentioned, for over 20 years. And I didn't realize it until I kind of looked back and said, wow, I've wasted in so many ways years that I could have cultivated, not only in relationship with my dad, but it also began to infect other relationships in my life. So it absolutely is chains for sure.
But you described it as, you know, you clung to your hurt. Like a badge of honor. That's an interesting idea that, you know, it, even though it's this dysfunction, that we sort of wear it pridefully.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things I know as a licensed psychologist is when we talk about families, families are systems. So there are individual people within that family, but the system functions as a whole. And even within a dysfunctional family, that's familiar. Whatever functioning that's occurring between the individuals is their norm. And I think for me, bitterness and anger and hurt became the norm, not only for me, but within our family as a whole. And that's just the way we moved through the universe. And it did become a badge of honor as I shared my story with friends and, you know, believers and non-believers. It was almost as if I was sharing that story, not so much for God to get the glory or to pursue healing, but to feel justified in my unforgiveness towards my dad.
Does forgiveness, does it get harder the longer we wait to seek it?
I think so. You know, one of the analogies that comes to mind for me is a tree. And you can tell the life story of a tree, not only by its rings, the rings in the trunk, but also by the depth of its roots. And I think forgiveness functions very similarly, that over time, those roots of bitterness deepen, they widen as we talk about the story and don't pursue forgiveness and healing, the deeper and wider those roots get. And it becomes incredibly challenging to overcome that the longer we wait to seek forgiveness. Absolutely.
Dr. Mikael Harris is my guest. She's a licensed psychologist. And was this something that you realized you need to address in your own life experience when you were, you know, working with clients and helping others dealing with their issues of unforgiveness? Did it sort of hit you at one point, say, I've got some stuff to take care of myself?
That's an interesting question. I think as a psychologist and as a believer, the Lord is so strategic in who he allows to cross your path. Absolutely. Over the years, as I sat across the room from clients, there were these same stories that I would hear. And, you know, as a psychologist, we're kind of prompted to receive counseling of our own. And so I did that. And there were seasons where it kind of hit me, you know, inside much more than others. But absolutely, I think the Lord used other people to really plant seeds and to really force me to address this issue that I was talking to clients about. You know, one of the things that I would say to clients frequently was, you can't heal what, or God cannot heal what you won't reveal. And I think there's something really powerful in opening up, being vulnerable and revealing, hey, this is an issue that I wrestle with. And when it's brought to the light, that's really when God can do his work, to, you know, structure the relationship, to maneuver in ways that only he can, so that you can live the life that he wants you to live.
In the article, I Was Shackled by Unforgiveness, you suggest there's three steps that we can take to pursue forgiveness and freedom. And we're going to talk about that in a couple minutes. We'll take a quick break. and hear more from Dr. Michael Harris in just a minute here on Faith Radio Mornings. Time is 17 past the hour. It's Monday morning. Faith Radio Mornings underway. I'm Neil Stabem, sitting in for Peter Kapsner. And I'm sure all of us, without thinking too long or hard, can come up with some areas where forgiveness would be appropriate, would be the right step. But it's forgiveness is messy, and it can be a long-time process. We're talking about it today with Dr. Michael Harris, who is an associate professor and a licensed psychologist specializing in pediatric and family health, and talking about an article she's written called I Was Shackled by Unforgiveness. And Dr. Harris, in that article, you suggest there are three steps that we can begin to get us on the right path. Talk about those.
Absolutely. I frame this in three steps. However, as you mentioned, forgiveness is very messy, so I don't want to present this like it's a linear three-step process only. However, I do think these are three key ingredients that will help you begin the process. The first element is to decide to forgive. One of the things that I came to realize after many, many years of unforgiveness towards my dad is that forgiveness ultimately is a choice. It's a command from the Lord. And I'd love to read from the Passion Translation. It's one of my new favorite translations of the Bible. In Colossians 3:13, it says to tolerate the weaknesses of those in the family of faith, forgiving one another in the same way you have been graciously forgiven by Jesus Christ. If you find fault with someone, release the same gift of forgiveness to them. Nowhere in that scripture does it say forgive when you feel like it, or forgive if those emotions prompt you to forgive. Ultimately, the Lord's saying, look, forgive. Tolerate the weakness of those in the family of faith. And so the first element is to just make a decision to forgive. And I ultimately had to do that with my dad. I was kind of waiting for the emotions to prompt me to forgive him. But ultimately, after, you know, counseling and meeting with one of my spiritual mentors, it really became clear that it was not going to be an emotional decision. It was going to be a rational decision to choose to forgive. So that's the first element there. Secondly, I think that the article talks about empathizing with the person who's offended you. And it was really interesting to me as I made that decision to forgive and kind of wrote out this forgiveness statement with my dad. The Lord began to bring to my mind stories that he had told me over the years, and it really related to the relationship that he had with his father. And it was so amazing that the Lord took those stories and helped me see my dad almost as a little boy. And as I saw him in that way, it became clear to me that not only had he inflicted hurt, he had been hurt. And so I was able to see him not through just this lens of anger and unforgiveness anymore. It really was a lens of compassion. And the Lord used that to shine a light on his relationship with me, that, yes, I'm hurt and I'm seeking a father. My dad had been hurt and was seeking his father. And it was this parallel process, which really helped me to not only view him as an offender, but as another human being walking through this journey of life. And then thirdly, to be still. You know, I think when it comes to emotions, a lot of us tend to be emotionally reactive, and when we're hurt, our natural instinct is to pursue and to attack the person who's offended us. But I think it's important that we allow God to heal not only you, but the other person, sometimes apart from one another. And that was really hard for me. I'm a person who likes to take action. And so there were moments where, for lack of a better phrase, I was trying to force forgiveness and force the process to hurry up and get through it. But I really had to trust that God was not only doing a work in me, he was also doing a comparable work in my dad, even in moments of silence, and that my stillness was so important to be able to hear from him, but also to be able to allow that compassion to rise in my dad and towards my dad. So by the time we came together, it was a beautiful moment that was absolutely divine and nothing that I could have orchestrated on my own.
I wonder, too, if there are sometimes challenges if the person that who has offended you is unaware that they've caused an offense.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
How do we respond to that?
Yeah, that's difficult. The first thing that I would advise someone to do is to really pray. And I think that the prayer is not just an emotional issue. I think it's more of prayer to see if the offense is really real. Sometimes we're hurt and the person really hasn't done anything. Sometimes we're filtering an offense through our own experience. And if we've been hurt, sometimes we're overly sensitive to experiences and relationships that we have with other people. So to really pray and ask God whether that offense is authentic, if it's legitimate. So that would be the first step. Then if and when the Lord reveals, you know, that this really is something that needs to be addressed, to decide by a committed action to forgive right away. Again, not based on how you feel and not necessarily based on what the other person's done, but to make that rational choice to forgive and then wait. Honestly, this is one of the hardest elements, in my opinion, with forgiveness, is the waiting. Because when we're hurt, again, we want to instinctually respond and we want that process to hurry up because it's painful. But the waiting and observation, that stillness, is so important so that we can truly see the next best step in the process. And it's an opportunity for the Lord to speak to the other person, the person who we believe has offended us, and kind of work in their heart. And again, I believe that the Lord is so amazing and so big that he can maneuver and orchestrate a series of events where you have the opportunity to come together with that person at the right time so that you don't make the situation worse. And then finally, to share with the person directly. One thing that I did over the years with my dad and our story was just share the story over and over and over again. And while I thought that was healing, it was actually kind of poisonous because all that did was fuel my judgments and fuel my unforgiveness. So to make sure we're sharing directly with the Father and then directly with the individual, of course, seeking counsel from godly individuals, but to really be careful in how we're talking about the story.
Yeah. We live in a time where social media has given us an opportunity to quickly offend, and the world of microaggressions seems to be becoming more macro. This is a timely word in a season where there's where we're easily offended and forgiveness is perhaps much more needed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that these microaggressions, it's interesting. In psychology, you know, we talk about macroaggressions and microaggressions, and in society, there are many legitimate microaggressions towards one another. At the same time, I think that we also can become overly sensitized to offense and, you know, interpret everything as someone offending us, even if that's not the individual's intent. But I will say that the offense truly resides in the person who's been hurt, which is very subjective. And I think that's what makes forgiveness hard, because it's hard to tell someone how they should or should not feel about a situation. I think that we have to extend compassion and understanding towards one another. And one of the things that I think about, not only as a psychologist, but also as a friend and a family member, is to not underestimate the value of listening. It's something that we really don't do well, in my opinion, in society, but I think it's a very powerful tool to open ourselves up to listening to the heart of another person. And as we do, we're going to realize that, wow, now I understand why they may have interpreted something in that way, which opens our hearts towards compassion. And we're able to see and not judge someone's hurt and understand them in a much more authentic way.
Good words today from Dr. Michael Harris, associate professor, licensed psychologist, has authored the book Relaxing Into the Pain, My Journey into Grief and Beyond. Michael, if people want to find out more about you, maybe just to get caught up on some of your writing, what's the best way to find out more?
They can certainly follow me on Twitter. My handle is Dr. Michael, DrMekel. And I also have a Facebook page, which is dedicated to my writings. I believe it's facebook.com/MikkelHarrisAuthor, I believe. So those would be the best ways to learn more about me. I'd love to hear from folks.
Thank you for joining us this morning. Some important steps on the journey toward forgiveness and getting wise counsel today from Dr. Mikkel Harris here on Faith Radio Mornings, 27 past the hour. Coming up in a moment, we're going to talk about fashionable nonsense. No, it has nothing to do with forgiveness, but it talks about some of what's going on in academia with the peer review studies. We'll get to that on Breakpoint just ahead. To think God's thoughts, we need to know what he says, and God has written to us in his word. And you have the opportunity to get a copy of the new CSB Reference Bible when you sign up today at myfaithradio.com. Christian Standard Bible, it's a new translation. And this reference Bible is one we're giving away one each week here on Faith Radio. So enter to win today at myfaithradio.com and get a deeper understanding of God's Word. And you can sign up today, myfaithradio.com. Coming up here in about 5-6 minutes, we'll talk to Dr. David Aikman. We'll talk Brexit and migrants moving toward the southern border and more on the story of the Saudi journalists. And all that's just ahead here on Faith Radio Mornings. On Friday's Faith Radio Mornings, I had a chance to hear from Chief Cochran, the former fire chief in Atlanta. And thanks to Alliance Defending Freedom, received a settlement, an important religious freedom case. David Cortman was the chief counsel for Alliance Defending Freedom, and he talked about how Christians need to stand up for themselves.
But these are battles we've got to fight regardless. These are battles you'll see popping up all around the country. And what's interesting, these are not people who go out and are activists, you know, quote unquote, or try to cause trouble. These are people just living out their faith as best they can, being kind, respectful, treating everybody the way they would want to be treated, and yet they're being sought after and have finally decided to say, look, we can't let this go on. We've got to take a stand. We should be able to live out our faith without punishment, and that's what all these folks are doing.
David Cortman from the Alliance for Defending Freedom. Great conversation from Friday's Faith Radio Mornings. You'd find it on myfaithradio.com when you click on the Faith Radio Mornings show page. Just ahead, visit with Dr. David Aikman, award-winning correspondent, ready to go here on Faith Radio.
When I tell parents, don't be perfect, they sometimes come back and say to me, well, of course I'm not perfect. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. I'm not ignorant of the fact that we all have deep flaws. No one is perfect. But I meet too many moms and dads who act like they've got it all together. Or worse yet, demand that their teens have it all together. Their standards are so high that no human can reach them, especially no awkward, gawky teenager. So, when I tell you don't be perfect, think about what you're expecting of others. Are you ready to walk away if your son makes a mistake? Are you worried that a misstep in your daughter's behavior will reflect poorly on you? Cut them a little slack. No one is perfect.
Want to hear Mark in person? For a list of upcoming events, go to parentingtodaysteens.org.
My name is Bond, James Bond.
The walk-up music for our conversation with Dr. David Aikman, award-winning correspondent, our foreign affairs contributor here on Faith Radio Mornings. I'm Neil Stabem, sitting in for Peter Kapsner. And David, I always enjoy the conversations. So looking forward to chatting again with you today. I want to go back to, it was on this date back in 1962 that President Kennedy announced an air and naval blockade of Cuba following the discovery of Soviet missile bases on the island. So wondering where you were and what you remember about those uncertain times.
Well, I was an undergraduate at college in England. And what I remember is the incredible demonstrations by communist-led youth up the main streets of the city of Oxford, really supporting Khrushchev and Castro and absolutely dead against what the United States had done in terms of the blockade. And I also remember American aircraft overhead almost entirely nonstop during that time, because they fear there might be a strategic attack by the Russians. and they would have to set off and drop their own bombs. It was kind of a shaky time.
Yeah. Well, just this weekend, now we learned that President Trump has been planning to withdraw from a Cold War era nuclear arms treaty. Former Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev says that's a bad idea. That's going to have some unforeseen consequences. Let's talk about that.
Well, of course, the INF Treaty was the hallmark of the Reagan-Gorbachev reconciliation and the height of the sort of peace process between the United States and the Soviet Union. When Gorbachev was in charge of the Soviet Union, it hadn't yet broken up. And that was in the 1980s. And I think for the time being, the INF Treaty, as it was called, did have a lot of effect on relations between the Soviets and the U.S. because the Soviets had gotten very annoyed when the United States had placed Pershing intermediate missiles in West Germany as a possible deterrent to any Soviet attack from the east. And that seemed to cool off the situation between the two superpowers at that point. But the problem is, under Putin, the Russian military has upped its game completely. And furthermore, Putin has made it clear that the Russian Federation, would not abjure first use of nuclear weapons if it came to a conflict with the West. And he's rolled out a number of new missile systems, and the Americans are very disturbed.
Rightly so, I would think, right? This is...
I think so, yes. Yeah. I mean, they've gotten away with a lot. And, you know, under the Obama administration, there was a little bit of hand-wringing about all this, but no real tough warnings came from Washington. So the Russians just continued. They assumed that everything was as normal and they didn't have to worry about anything. But I think they've been served notice good and proper right now.
Mm. Well, speaking of hand-wringing, is that where we're headed with Saudi Arabia, or will there be significant warnings as a result of the Saudi journalists killed in Turkey?
You know, even if President Trump is not willing to impose direct sanctions on the Saudi leadership or the regime, I think the U.S. Senate under Lindsey Graham is likely to force his hand. I mean, the groundswell of horror at what happened to this poor man Khashoggi when he entered the consulate is now worldwide, and nobody can protect or nobody can defend the actions of the Saudi regime in doing this. Unfortunately, it's very hard to believe that since some of the perpetrators of this crime were in fact very close in the security detail to Mohammed bin Sultan, the crown prince, it's very hard to see how he wasn't at least aware of what was going to happen. He may not have approved of what actually happened in the embassy, but ultimately he must have dispatched those guys to try to kidnap Khashoggi and bring him home, or at least threaten him. And I don't think there's any getting away from that.
Associated with tyrants, so one way or the other. I mean, nothing is simple there. I mean, we pick Saudi Arabia because they're helping us in our fight against Iran. So, what side do we come down on in this no-win situation?
That's right. And, of course, the Saudi regime has been quite thuggish with its internal opponents. I mean, even keeping in jail women who are protesting against the restriction on females driving, even though women now are allowed to drive in Saudi Arabia, the women who were imprisoned for campaigning for that are still in jail. I mean, this is a complete non sequitur.
Yeah, I know that you mentioned, saw another report, too, that this journalist was not, he was not necessarily a fan of democracy, and think how sometimes the West were pretty quick to pick up on any reforms and think about the, you know, Arab Spring and not really fully understanding this. Maybe we don't know as much about this gentleman's his political leanings as well. So nothing is as simple as it gets portrayed.
That's right. He was an Islamist. And, of course, the Saudis are basically Islamists. But he was at odds with them because of the way the royal family, the Saudi family, ruled Arabia. He basically wanted the Muslim Brotherhood to implement a regime in Saudi Arabia. And one of the reasons he got killed was he had been an asset of Saudi intelligence, and he knew everything about the Saudi royal family. And they must have been terrified that he would leak that stuff to adversaries of the Saudi king and the regime.
It's 47 past the hour. We're talking today with Dr. David Aikman. He's a regular contributor here on Faith Radio Mornings, and so enjoy his perspective on foreign affairs. But he also weighs in on what's going on this side of the pond as well. And we'll talk a little bit about a number of migrants moving toward the southern border, and President Trump has threatened some military closure of the border to block that. And we'll get his take on that coming up in a couple minutes here on Faith Radio Morning. 10 before the hour, and a few more minutes remaining with our foreign affairs correspondent, Dr. David Aikman. And one of the stories that is making lots of news here is a caravan of immigrants or migrants moving toward the southern border. The president said he's going to order the military to close the border to stop the flow. I know one of the conversations you want to have, David, is about just influence in U.S. midterm elections. This certainly is going to impact the elections, it seems like.
Yes, indeed. I mean, of course, the obvious assumption is that Hispanic voters will vote against the Republicans because they're sympathetic to any migrant from Central or South America who tries to make it to the United States. But that may not be the case, and I wouldn't be surprised if Hispanic voters actually go the other way in Florida, where it's really important which party they vote for.
You know, a country has to have borders, right? I mean, it's not really a country otherwise.
Well, that's true. And, of course, the border issue, that gives me a chance to segue into the whole Brexit question.
Yeah.
The Irish don't want Britain to leave the European Union because they want to keep their frictionless border with Northern Ireland. And now Theresa May, the British Prime Minister, is really in the midst of a serious leadership squabble over how she handles Brexit and how she handles the border so that Ireland is not discomforted and the EU goes along with it. It's a very difficult and very complex situation. And I think Theresa May's leadership will be challenged by some in the Conservative Party.
I noted over the weekend, right, another major kind of protest, thousands of people protesting. Is this a matter of that the process is taking so long that the opposition has a chance to just build a stronger case?
Well, certainly that's partly the case, but it's also sour grapes. Any side that loses an election, as we've seen in the United States, the Democrats who were furiously against Trump would really like to replay the American election all over again to instate, if not Hillary, at least somebody from their party. And in the case of Brexit, most British people accepted that in 2016, the vote leave, which surpassed the vote to stay in the EU, was the decision of the people. Now you have people who say, well, it's very difficult what the transfer is going to be like. We may lose our jobs and so forth. They want to basically discount the original vote and have another vote because they say they now know more about the conditions of Brexit than they did at the time of the original referendum. And I don't think that will fly, really.
Can you, in maybe 90 seconds, summarize what was the reason behind the Brexit move in the first place?
The basic reason for Brexit was the feeling that Britain no longer had sovereignty over its own country, particularly in terms of migrants through the European Union. And most of those migrants were not European. They were from parts of Africa and so forth. And the EU was giving instructions about how Britain should manage its borders. And that really stuck in the craw of British people, who also felt that the whole of their society was being remanaged by the EU bureaucracy in Brussels, which, as everybody knows, is not elected and is not accountable. So the vote leave was a very solid vote for the reinstatement of British sovereignty over its own territory.
You would think that that would hold sway here as people, I guess, if they understand the terms and conditions.
Absolutely. I mean, I can understand the discontent of the Remainers, as they're called, the people who oppose Brexit. But it really is a question of sour grapes to have a referendum which the Prime Minister said will be the final consequence of the debate, and yet have the result disputed by the people who were on the losing side. I think that's really very unreasonable.
We seem to have moved into a season where disputing elections and choices has become ongoing. We don't now election
Absolutely.
Cycles, they run 4 years long, it seems like.
Well, I mean, everybody thinks that the American electoral system is constantly ongoing, that the day after the president is elected, his opposition party forms up to select a new candidate for the future elections 3 years away. And it's almost comical, but it's also very unfortunate because emotions get very inflamed.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost comical, but it's more like sad, I guess. So we'd like to laugh,
yeah.
But we're probably crying. So.
That's right, yeah. And of course, we've got the midterms coming up in the U.S., and very interesting to see what the results will be.
Well, we'll talk more about it when we connect with you next week, because it'll be 1 week closer to who knows what. We'll get your perspective
That's
on
right.
it, and always appreciate it. Dr. David Aikman, our foreign affairs contributor here on Faith Radio Mornings, award-winning correspondent, joining us today here on Faith Radio Mornings. We'll wrap up the show here in just a minute. Who doesn't love just listening to David Aikman with his insights and perspectives? So appreciate him. If you missed part of that conversation this morning, you can always catch it. We post those interviews on the Faith Radio Morning Show page at myfaithradio.com. Our earlier conversation with Dr. Michael Harris as well. Be some great insight on forgiveness in this contentious time in which we live. And speaking of, I'll leave you with a couple of quotes from M.R. Dehan. He said, "It's not necessary to blow out your neighbor's light to let your own shine." Keep that in mind today as you head into work, whatever you have going on. And Jerry Bridges said this, "Your worst days are never so bad that you're beyond the reach of God's grace, and your best days are never so good that you're beyond the need of God's grace." Remember to reflect on God's grace today and stick around for great Bible teaching. We open up God's Word with Colin Smith here in just a few minutes, and Peter Capson will be back tomorrow here on Faith Radio Mornings.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.